All of the government programs that we don't like are funded by theft. All of the government programs that we do like... Oh, sorry, there aren't any. Government is the reason that healthcare is expensive. Government is the reason you can't go to college. Taxation is theft.
And welcome back to Taxation is Theft, the show that talks about all the ways the government is ripping you off and what you can do to stop them. Broadcasting live on Facebook and YouTube from an underground bunker deep within the jungles of Mexico, I'm Dan Taxation is Theft Berman, former candidate for president of the United States, currently in the race for governor of Texas. And tonight is our first episode of Debate Me, You Coward, the show where I pick fights with random people on the internet and invite them to debate me face to face. Almost. So they can't just hide behind their keyboards in the underground bunkers of their mom's house, throwing out insults like racist, fascist, and moron. And before we get started, just so you know, Bitcoin is currently 36,491. So you can probably use that to gauge the delay on this live stream. Tonight's coward, Stephen Blind, is going to fight with me over the historical value of the Trump presidency. It's going to be pretty awesome, a pretty bloody fight. So stick around for this. But before we get started, if you're watching the live stream, please remember to like and share and comment and add your questions and throw in your insults. Join the fight, and I'll read some of your insults out. If they're good, they better be good.
My cat is here too. See?
Oh.
Introduce Kalachi, please.
Debate me, you pussy.
You'll be a valuable contributor. It's really unfair.
Tonight's episode is brought to you by the Nug of Knowledge, indoor-grown, chemical-free, smokable hemp, the number one cannabis alternative. And they've also got Delta 8 vape cartridges. Just gave me some cotton mouth just thinking about it. Get elevated at nugofknowledge.com. And the show is also brought to you by water. Have some. And now on to the show. What's your problem, man?
Wait, water? Is that already privatized now? Jesus.
I believe it is. This is actually black market water. It did not come from the official Nestle factory.
Oh, wow. A little cartel going on. All right.
Man, so you approached me with an interesting topic about Trump and what it's going to mean.
The endurance of these last 4 years, the Trump branded zeitgeist, as it were. And you know, me being I suppose a Leninist, I don't get too wrapped up in tendencies, because that's mostly kind of like a online internet binary of, you know, just inconsequential arguments, basically. But I just figured we'd have somewhat unique perspectives on this, maybe more similar than we think. I don't fucking know. But regardless, here we are. So,
always all right.
So who wants to go first? Which of us is gonna lay it on the table?
I'll let you throw the first punch.
Okay. Well, I think Donald Trump, for all the talk of him being a unique aberration or something, you know, entirely unto himself. If you really look at it in the trajectory of, you know, just the American political and economic system, he's just more of the same, really. I mean, even his, illustratively enough, like even his campaign slogan, Make America Great Again, is, it's not original. It's a retread. It's Ronald Reagan's old slogan when he ran. And I think there's a lot of parallels between Trump and Reagan, but more particular, I think Ronald Reagan kind of set the stage for Donald Trump in a lot of ways, in that I think he was one of the first presidents in this like current epoch wherein it's less about like fundamental policy or anything like that, and more just people treating it like a advertisement or a big advertising campaign rather for another product, like the hallowed halls of state, the White House has become just another consumerist drive, another product that's been absorbed into the capitalist reifying market. And, you know, we have sort of I'm not one to really talk about Keynes too much, or Keynes, however you say it, but that I think his boom and bust cycle kind of speaks to that. If you're on like in that sort of partisanship, you know, it's like one, you get the Democrat, next you get the Republican. And meanwhile, they both disappoint you as the capitalist system slowly decays and erodes and life gets worse. And, you know, so I think Trump's just the latest example of that. And now we're going into Biden, which will be another example. The only thing unique to Trump, I think, is that he himself is a hilarious fail child. And just, it's like, if you ever wanted to see what Eric Cartman would be like as president, you basically got it.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. Yeah, and I have to agree with everything you said except for the stone you threw at capitalism. But of course, we could argue that we would need to agree on a definition of what capitalism is, because I've heard some definitions that I don't like either. But yeah,
I mean, these are all a lot of these terms become floating signifiers after a while anyway, you know. So
right. Well, that's kind of part of the problem, too. Like, you talk about, you know, make America great again, and a lot of people have different definitions of what great means. And you're absolutely right. Well, I mean, it's become like a Nike slogan. It's the just do it world.
Well, I mean, that's exactly what it is. I mean, illustratively, I think Noam Chomsky pointed out that the Obama campaign, if you want to look at the opposite end of that, that was voted, you know, Apple's advertising campaign of the year when he ran, you know. So I mean, there you go. It's just, you know, the wheelhouse in which this stuff operates now.
I think that's got less to do with politics and just more to do with shall we say mind control.
Because I mean, that is politics.
Whether you're a capitalist trying to get somebody to buy something, or whether you're a politician trying to get somebody to vote for something, you know, once you figure out how to control people's behavior and make them go to the voting box and press a certain button, or, you know, go to a certain store and swipe a certain card and buy a certain thing, or click a certain button on the internet, that's all got to do with mind control. And I think the same strategies, no matter what you're selling, whether it's politics or cheap crap, it's the same method. It's the repetition. It's the lifestyle, trendy, imagery that you build and associate with the idea, and with the behavior.
You're getting into sort of like Guy Debordian sort of like, you know, what the French situationists would call the spectacle, you know, the collection of images that reinforces the, you know, hegemonic, you know, coercive body politic, basically. And it is very multifaceted, multifarious, and like it's not from any one group of people or one impulse. It's the overall circumstance that systemically results in this, you know, overall circumstance. So it sounds very conspiratorial until you start unpacking it and the just kind of historical.
Conspiracy?
Well, that's the thing. There's like a lot of conspiracies. There's not just one, but the thing is, like, when we popular, I know we're kind of going off here, but like when we popularly talk about conspiracy theories, it all becomes very individualized. It becomes about if only we could do this one thing, you know. It becomes like a pet project more than like anything dealing with real politics, you know. Like, let's talk about like, I don't know, just for example, like, just name a conspiracy theory.
Epstein didn't kill himself.
Okay. Epstein didn't kill himself. Yeah. Okay. Like there's that, there's, you know, 9/11 was an inside job, all that stuff. The thing about these is that they divorce these problems from their political context into a just sort of like a murder mystery or game of Clue, where like if you can like granularly reduce all of these things to like this one linchpin, like if we can just stop this satanic cabal of pedophiles, or if we can just have this like day of reckoning for you know, all the people at the Diamond Building and like, you know, the Bush administration, then that will just be like this one thing all neatly wrapped up and sealed away in a nice bow, and that'll be like the end of it, just like on TV, you know, when really these problems aren't anything like that. And I think those sorts of, I don't know, that sort of, in my opinion, myopic vantage point or attempt at challenging things or changing this one, whatever thing in particular it is, I think it detracts from the overall socioeconomic and political system that creates that reality and has to still be rooted out. Because if you don't, then you're just kind of slapping a Band-Aid on a flesh wound, and the prevailing system will, you know, carry on. And right. then you'll get that problem right. again, whether down the road or sooner rather than later. Who knows?
That's interesting, because I was talking to somebody today, and he was, you know, he's neither a fan of the Democrats or the Republicans. He just wants to get rid of the whole damn thing. And was, you know, he was like, man, he's like, I think we need a revolution. I think that's the only thing that's going to change it. And I told him, yeah, it sounds nice, but at the end of the day, if we defeat the government and it goes away, we are still going to be back to this. How long is it going to be before somebody's like, before you're fighting with somebody else and somebody says, well, okay, we obviously can't agree. Let's take a vote. And then all of a sudden you're back in the same situation again. Everybody's
voting for the same old crap. Well, I mean, that's the, well, when you talk to activists, a lot of them talk about, you know, what's called base building. And it, I remember a lot of my friends and I, we talk about this sort of thing. Remember, I always use Chris Dorner as an example of this sort of thing. Like, you remember him, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, Chris Dorner, like, just went full GTA and, like, just obliterated the police. Like, it just every, you know, the national, you know, police force just destroyed. He, you know, he's fucking John McClane, just goes off, you know? And even if, like, you've done that and you just got rid of the police and they just weren't a factor anymore, you know, the modern overseers of the, you know, chattel slave state is just gone, you know. But most average people, unless you instill in them, like, an idea or, you know, something, an alternative, then they're just going to rebuild that. So right. A lot of activism is designed about or centered around base building and educating the populace. And I think you, again, that's one of those things where you and I think would agree, because you can't just, you know, you can't just snap your fingers and say, yeah, you know, revolution achieved, you know, full rotation, you know, we've given history its push, you know. And, you know, because people are just going to resort to what they already know. You know, it's an old Marxist precept. People learn by experience. And, you know, like, if they don't have that experience or aren't exposed to those ideas or whatever, then, you know, they're just going to revert to what they know.
Right. Yeah, I think that's, you know, that's one of the things that I've been talking about throughout, you know, all my political campaigns is, you know, everybody's like, yeah, you're not going to win, or, you know, you need to run a serious campaign and all this shit. And it's like, that's not really the thing, because if, you know, yeah, if I could pander in the right way, or even if I joined one of the major political parties and I could pander the right way and get elected, that wouldn't change anything, because the minute I start imposing my values or voting my values, on a population who voted for me for different reasons, they're going to want me out of there, and they're going to still be demanding the original things that they wanted before I even started. So what change does that actually make?
Yeah. Again, like, revolution can't come from the top. It has to come from below, which is, you know, another axiom. Like, you do have some people who talk about, like, running, like, you know, like, I suppose it'd be the, you know, equivalent of what you were doing. You know, I think yours is maybe more of like a Franksterist kind of, you know, bid for it, so to speak, you know, kind of a protest sort of campaign, or, you know, as they call it. And I'm not trying to be a dick about it. I don't mean that derogatory. Yeah. I'm just saying, no, you're not gonna. Voting is it's literally the least you can do.
It's
very much like, you know, it might be the most change you can make in a day, but, you know, that's you know, what's that worth to you? You know, like,
yeah, and it's a little bit of labor, a little bit of vote.
What's that?
People put down the protest vote as, you know, yeah, it's not going to count for anything. Like, you're giving validity to the system and all this shit. And no, I say a protest vote is actually a really great middle finger to the system. So,
I mean, because, you know,
they know.
It's an
indication that the revolution is fomenting.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fun little, you know, like personal gesture. You know, it feels nice. And, right. You know, it just in and
yeah,
of itself.
Yeah, you're right. At the end of the day, it doesn't change much. The change has to come from us, from the bottom.
Yeah, yeah. And just building, you know, powers and structures outside of the, you know, capitalist system, which is becoming harder and harder. But because it's just such a totalizing force that, yeah.
So let's talk about this, because I always find this interesting. Okay. What's your definition of capitalism?
Well, for me, capitalism, I mostly relate it to the wage relation. For me, capitalism really took off with colonialism, essentially. After feudalism fell and you had the enclosure system, and which would eventually morph into private property, then you had colonialism, because countries like England, Spain, France, they needed more natural resources. I mean, how familiar with colonialism are you, by the way?
A little bit. I mean, you've got which colony, I guess.
Just the overall like system of colonialism. The overall just like
moving somewhere, kicking people out, taking their land.
That's a part of it. But also for our devices here, it's the extraction of resources, of capital. Ultimately.
Well, that's the incentive,
like,
to go take over a new
place. You know, it's all, you know, it's all worth something. But yeah, so you had like countries like France, Spain, Britain, you know, they, you know, mostly Africa, eventually Central America, and, you know, they would, you know, extract resources from these lands, and, you know, and the mercantilist system, they needed to make sure their currency would, you know, still be viable. Because, you know, we're having a more globalized, you know, economy, and we're getting out of neoclassical into classical economics, you know. So with the mercantilist system, it's like, we need to make sure the money we have is still going to be valuable and still valid. So we need armies to make sure that happens. And these armies need money to get these resources. So what you basically get is kind of like a, you know, sort of Smithian kind of circle jerk, where it's like, okay, we'll get your resources, you give us money, and we'll just keep this, you know, system flowing in the benefit of, you know, basically the same people who benefited from feudalism. You know, like the world workshop was still Britain, like Spain was still heavily involved in trade, and, you know, that's the thing about political power. It doesn't give itself up, you know, like it's going to metastasize and mutate and permutate. But, you know, again, short of a actual revolution, and there are very different revolutions, some would, like, I would say the shift from feudalism to mercantilism and capitalism is something of a you know, a color revolution. But yeah, like, that's what we're kind of dealing with. My point is, the functions of colonialism, the hierarchies, let's say, of like countries like Britain, France, Spain, and, you know, historically their you know, saplings, their political partners and buddings like America, we still enjoy the general historic systemic exploitations of that initial system, like Africa, Central America, and sociopolitically speaking, you know, Black people, African Americans, you know, Latinos, people who were kind of got the shit end of the stick of colonialism are still feeling those effects, you know, especially after, you know, American slavery and, you know, the African Americans case. So, you know, like, and again, like you were, like your mate was saying, only a only a revolution and casting off of that, of that, of those systematic gears, will that be, you know, fixed or modified? So,
right,
like, right, these kind of things. Go on, sorry.
I think it's, you know, you bring up a really a lot of really good points, and I want to bring up that, you know, a lot of people in the capitalist circle, people who call themselves capitalists, usually what they're referring to is free market capitalism, and what you're talking about is more of a statist version of capitalism, where, you know, you still have a controlled currency, and somebody controls that currency, and they want that currency to be valuable, and they want to control people using that currency, and that's definitely a separate thing. And so and that's kind of why I stopped using the words free market capitalism, just using free market.
Sure.
But I think, you know, you're absolutely right. That is, you know, and all you have to do in the United States is to look at the currency itself. Well, if this is really like, if this type of capitalism is really free market capitalism, why is it illegal to have any currency other than the US dollar? Why are they trying so hard to fight Bitcoin? Why did they shut down Liberty Coin, Liberty Dollar? And you know, why did they make it so difficult? Why did they kill the president of Egypt when he wanted to use gold for his exchange currency for oil? You know, why are they fighting so hard to keep their currency? And that, I would argue, is the more
was Gaddafi
demonic
from Egypt?
Version of yeah, that was Egypt, right? Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was Egypt. You're looking it up now, aren't you? Oh shit! Oh shit! What's that? Now it's a debate. but others have tried that too. I think some of the guys in Saudi Arabia were trying to use gold instead of oil.
Well, fuck me in the ass with a knife, eh? well, look.
I know Libya.
There you go. Look, I'm, in my estimation, in my opinion, you cannot have capitalism without a state. Capitalism has been wedded to the state since its inception. Like saying you can have capitalism without, like, a, you know, federal or central body, you know, to level things out is like saying you can play football without a field. I mean, even Adam Smith talks about the invisible hand. And if you actually read Smith, the invisible hand is, you know, very much talking about like a, you know, like the crown, or, you know, a, you know, localized, you know, serfdom sorting out, you know, roads and the like, because a lot of times those things, you know, what, you know, communists would consider property, like roads, air, nature, trees, things like that, you know, those tend to be overlooked in individual market transactions, you know, that they are what are called, you know, non-excludable externalities. So essentially, like, say you and I were like, I don't know, I wanted to sell you my cat or whatever. Like, that's, you know, there's not really anything to, you know, account for that, you know, like, yeah, maybe, oh, I'd be sad because the cat's gone or whatever, but that's between you and I, and that's fine because it's like a personal individual thing. And there she goes because I made her mad. But regardless,
sell me what?
My cat.
No, your, like, cat's like, you sell me? I'm out of here. Fuck you.
Oh, yeah, I gotcha. Yeah. But like, and that's fine at individual level. And then you know, say you get a bit further, and like, you're buying a car. You know, like, there's no accounting for whether or not you're a good driver in and of that transaction itself. You know. Like, so that's why you have like a federal apparatus, like a driver's license, or you take a driver's test or whatever. Like, you know, that's the, you know, safety buffer there. It, you know, that's the invisible hand in that situation. And even still, it's kind of like, you know, I don't know, like maybe some more hardline libertarians will be like, yeah, it's a bit shit. But, you know, for the most part, a lot of us could be like, well, that's whatever. But the issue comes when you get into, you know, the multinational conglomerates, the huge corporations, it, you know, what Lenin would call the cartels, you know, which is, you know, a word that sort of shifted in meaning over the years. But regardless, you know, now the externality is at like the macro scale of like, say, a BP, you know, like, we're going to, oh God, we need to find a cheaper way to, you know, dispose of this like crude oil or to transport this crude oil or whatever. And where you're supposed to have things like the EPA or, you know, certain like regulations, those tend to fail because they get bought out by, you know, private interests, private corporations, you know, that just kind of kneecap, you know, any federal oversight or checks on them. So, you know, and because the profit motive and, you know, naturally the, you know, declining rate of profit, you know, where it's easier to cut expenditures than it is to guarantee, you know, a net gain, you know, you're going to cut regulations, you're going to cut corners so you can, you know, provide a service at a cheaper rate than your competitor. And that's the cheap, that's the quickest way to do it. And because we're living quicker and quicker, you know, from business quarter to business quarter, and then microtransaction to microtransaction, like on the stock market, as we become more financialized, then, you know, like that's just naturally what's going to occur. Like you're going to get like a, like lower returns on these things. Like, and that's why you need some kind of regulatory body. Otherwise capitalism will just, you know, eat itself. I know I'm kind of going on a tangent here, but in the 1930s, the private sector itself had this debate with itself. And it decided that, you know, after, you know, obviously, you know what Fordization is, I assume, you know. You know what Fordization is, I assume.
Fordization. You mean like,
you know, the assembly line, Henry Ford. We've gone from making like 6 chassis a day to like 12 a minute or some shit, whatever.
Right.
You know, the consumer market, and I have a point here, so please bear with me. the consumer market used to be a luxury entity, you know, like we, the working class, were, you know, taught to be frugal and, you know, just toil the land, work at your little job, you know, you don't buy a lot of luxury goods. That's more for like the middle class and upper middle class back when these were like less mystified, confused things. So in the 1930s with Fordization, they had so much product that the private sector looked at itself and said, oh shit, we have too much product. Prices are going to fucking plummet because, you know, we have such a, our market is only the upper class and the middle class. So what they had to do was they basically had to create a consumer culture, a mass culture, now that they could, along with, you know, since newspaper and radio and a few years later television came along, they basically, here's a nice conspiracy theory for you. Well, not really a theory, but just a nice conspiracy for you. The private sector employed sociologists, psychoanalysts, like, was it Edward Bernays, Sigmund Freud's uncle or whatever?
The advertising guy.
Yes, exactly. And there's a great BBC documentary called The Human Use of Human Beings, I believe, which is all about that. It's great. It's got Stuart Ewens, who's a great writer on this subject in general, who pops in. It's really good stuff. But regardless, like, they basically turned, you know, frugal workers into like engaged consumers, and they did this by, you know, advertising as we know it and creating the mass culture as we know it, you know, like, so like that's just naturally how these things go, like,
right.
I want to
backtrack and, you know, address a few points that you brought up. So first of all, you know, with capitalism, there's the incentive for profit. Yes, absolutely. At the same time, incentive is always there. People always want things. If you take money away, people are still going to want things, whether it's, you know, I don't know. Did they have, I'm sure they had money when they were building the pyramids, but like you had some king who was like, I want just a giant fucking rock in the shape of a pyramid, of a triangle. Like, that's what I want. Build it for me. And, like, I don't think he would have made any profit from that, but he wanted to make it happen, and that was his incentive just to see it. Just to, like...
Well, now you're getting into things like social capital and, you know, historic, you know, just things of that nature.
It's all emotional capital, right? Because at the end of the day, like, I don't... like, I don't want money because it looks good sitting on my table. I want money because it makes me feel good. I want money because of the power that I have to, I can get a new PlayStation. I can go to the movies. I can travel around the world. All these things that you can do with it, that's where the real power of it comes from. And if it doesn't come from money, if it doesn't come from a dollar or Bitcoin or something else, like, people are, assuming the technology is also there, people are going to seek to do that because that's what makes them happy. And it's that emotional capital for themselves.
Yeah, of course. Like, people are naturally, I think people are naturally inclined to create and enjoy themselves and whatnot. But I don't see how something I don't see how capitalism like fosters that, though. To me, it does quite the opposite and like stymies that, because profit does not necessarily equate, innovation or, artistry or anything of that nature. Like, profit is its own.
Right. Well, and let's get into, this gets back to, the capitalism versus the money, because I've always said this, right? If somebody wants that incentive, right? Somebody's like, hey, I love money. I'm going to go earn as much as I can. That's fine. As long as they're not doing anything, inhumane or unjust to anybody else. That's totally fine.
I mean, most of the time they are. But that's the thing. Like, when you when you get to a certain sum of money that actually has like a consequence, like the gears and machinations.
Let me say this, because I think it's probably where you're going. There is, our entire society is, and this is where I hate the ism part of capitalism, because this is where, whether you say socialism, that's like, okay, everybody's got to participate in this socialism, communism, capitalism. Ism is just the thing that we say for like a system that everybody's going to be a part of. And for that, that's the idea that I reject, because you can have one person over there, he's earning money, he's doing whatever he wants to it, and I'm totally cool with that. But if I want nothing to do with money, I want to be an artist, that should be fine. I should be able to survive in this world without money. But that's where the capitalism comes in, through the force of government, to say, oh no, you've got to pay property tax. I don't care if you go live in the woods, you still have to pay property tax, which means you still have to go get a job working for some corporation or factory so that you can get the coin so you can pay the landlord or the government, so that you're not kicked off your land and forced to starve. And that, I think, is the objectionable part where somebody who's making money through voluntary exchange for profit and somebody who wants nothing to do with money, that's where they start butting heads, is where the person who doesn't want anything to do with money is forced to participate in that system, not because one person wants to make a profit, although he might be bribing his favorite politicians to make sure that there's a really good property tax, making sure he's got people who are desperate to work in his factory so that he can negotiate some really cheap labor. Yes, that's absolutely criminal. But to some guy who's just like, I'm going to open up a restaurant, see if I can make some money, where everything's totally voluntary, I think that's a totally separate picture. But you're right. On the bigger scale, that's usually where those criminal minds will be found lurking.
The issue there is that, like, you can't really have those, like, nice little, like, deviations, or, just little, like, local, like, communal sort of, like, you can't just section things off like that, because the capitalist system itself is entirely totalizing. It shapes everything in its own image. Like,
At what point, and I like to stick to this word, voluntary or consensual, at what point does a capitalist violate somebody else? Because, let's say somebody wanted to separate, and somebody wanted to have that isolation from the capitalism. What's the actual thing preventing them?
Well, the capitalist system itself, because we are all...
But how? What's it doing? You can't just say the system. It's the system. What? Because that gets back to the statement you originally made about conspiracy theories. What is the capitalist system doing that's forcing this other guy this artist who doesn't want to participate in the capitalist system, what exactly is it doing to him to make his life miserable for not wanting to participate?
Because you need you need to participate in the wage relationship to survive, to have food and shelter and, just general security.
In what way? Why can't he just make his little commune and isolate from all that?
Because,
Why?
Because you fucking, because you need capital and money for that, and the only way to get capital and money in a capital system is to engage in the wage relation.
Wait, wait, we're getting there though. We're getting there. Why do you need capital for that?
What do you mean, mate?
Like, why do you, like, I mean, there's a jungle 100 feet from where I'm sitting right now, where there's like, there's nobody, there's animals, there's fruit growing in trees. There's plenty of wood where I could build my own shelter. Why can't I just go there, build my own shelter, forage for food, and live right there? Why can't I do that?
I mean, nothing's fucking, that's not an inherently like capitalist or anti-capitalist thing. That's just you going to fuck off in the woods, mate. Like,
right.
It has nothing to do with anything.
But by doing so, I have absolutely no participation with capitalism.
But you do, because of the because the only reason you want to go and do that is because the capitalist system is so fucking miserable. You're not escaping skirting around anything. You're still being impressed upon by the system as is.
That's not true. I mean, that's like saying that's okay. What city do you live in?
I live in Houston.
Okay, so that's like saying the only reason you live in Houston is because San Antonio is such an awful place. Why would you go live in Houston? Well, it's only because San Antonio is awful. Otherwise, you'd be living in San Antonio. That's the argument you're making.
No, it's not. It's not at all the argument. I'm not making a value judgment, mate. I'm just speaking like to the material conditions in which we all exist. Like, you are not an island in and of yourself. Like, you're imposed upon by, you know, your interpretation of the world around you. Like, if you enjoyed something more than going and living off in the woods, which you're not doing, I might add, which you're not doing right now. You're sitting here talking to me.
I agree.
Which you're not doing. You wouldn't be like.
Well,
I can't argue a fucking like hypothetical like that, because it has no basis in reality. It's just
it does, because there are, well, and let me tell you this. There are people who live not too far from me who are literally, and some of them are in bigger communities, they're not individuals.
Sure, but
they're
they're
living there. And they're completely isolated for the most part. Some of them, you go far enough out, some of them don't even have electricity. But they'll come into town, they'll work a job for like maybe a week just to get some money. So yes, they're participating minimally with the capitalist system, and they'll use that money to like hire somebody to go out and drill a hole so that they can pull water out of the ground. But my point is this, that I'm in Mexico, so it's a little bit easier to do that. Sure. In the United States, it's practically impossible, because even if I moved out into the woods, it's only a matter of time before the government comes to knock on my door and says, you can't be here.
I
say, why? Whose land is this? Oh, well, it belongs to the state, or it belongs to somebody, you know, over there. That's kind of my point. Like,
but then here's the thing. You got to ask, why does the government own that land? Why is it protecting? Are there like endangered species there that would benefit from enduring? Are they trying to like protect a certain amount of part of the ecosystem? This goes back to the issues of, non-excludable market factors, like,
right.
I mean, again,
I'd say generally no, because I don't think the government really gives a shit about any of that, even though they say they do.
Do you think corporations do?
No, I don't. But so this is my thing.
So then,
like, this is my thing. Like, if the government can come, or a corporation can come and kick anybody off of any land just because this is like the colonialism you're talking about, right? That's a valuable piece of land. We're going to kick you out, and we're going to use it for whatever we want. And if we have a government with a set of laws, and somebody gets kicked off their land, and people just look to those laws and say, well, I mean, the government knows what they're doing because they're the government and they wrote the laws, and I'm sure they have lawyers and everything to understand that. So I'm sure if they kick this poor bastard out of the jungle so that the government can claim it, so they can protect some endangered species of snail, meanwhile Nestle's coming in to like pull all the water out of it, then like, okay, I guess that sounds totally legit. But it's the factor of the government kind of wrapped around that that gives it its legitimacy. When at the end of the day, we should ask, Why? This is a human being right here, and they just came in and kicked him off his land. How do they have the right to do that? I don't care how many laws they wrote. Why do they have the right to do that? And that's where I have an objection to it.
Yeah, but I mean, what you're getting at there with that, like, polemic you're kind of setting up, it's like you're kind of putting, like, oh, hold on, gotta let the cat out. Sorry. Go on, then.
Who owns
Sorry for not
who?
taking a sweet song. Anyways, but with that polemic, you're speaking to one man, you know, and the government, and you're kind of like isolating the two as like two opposing things, you know. And this takes us back to I don't know, let's say we're gonna get back to a little Marxist precept here, where it's where there's equality, force prevails. So who has the authority there? Who has the force there? That's the government,
The
because they
government.
have the political and, you know, economic authority to kick this guy off of, you know, their
And
land. Or
the physical force, the use of guns and military that they
well,
put out,
again,
even if it's just a sheriff, a single sheriff or an armed
yeah,
guard.
again, that's power. You know, that's still
Right.
political power, regardless. So basically, what you seek to do with something like base building or just activism in general is to make sure, in my case, according to the Lenin precept, who will outpace whom is you have to make sure that, you know, yourself, or ideally, you know, your class, you know, the working class, will outpace the government, will have, like, you know, like its own superstructures and social and political authority and means to, you know, be on the better end of that foot when the shoe drops, be more well armed, more organized, that sort of thing. Like, that's the onus of pretty much any leftist or progressive sort of ideation or, you know, schism or idea, you know. So in that, you know, example, let's say, you know, ideally that guy would have enough resources, you know, like have like a network of people, or, you know, what have you. You can go a million different ways with this kind of, you know, like hypothetical. To, you know, outpace the government and force them back or what have you. Like, so, but I don't know. Like, again, that's just, you know, hypothetical, you know, pie in the sky kind of stuff. But as it stands, like, I think, like, our little issue here is that, well, I guess I can only speak for myself, because we. It's weird because, like, you identify, and by you, I mean just, you know, a lot of libertarians identify these problems. You know, I, you know, like Karl Marx. You know, it's that they have a similar appreciation for the individual autonomy. You know, like Karl Marx saw capitalism as a, you know, improvement over feudalism. Mainly, you know, one of those things being that the individual had more, you know, autonomy. They weren't just, like, you know, immediately born into a caste system, you know. So I do think the libertarian precepts, you know, granted a lot of these started with the French and, you know, historical years prior when libertarianism was a very different term than it is in its Western American consensus, thanks to Koch brothers' money and whatnot. But it does still harbor a lot of generally positive things, like, you know, the individual autonomy. A lot of them are pro-sex work. You know, like, it has its finer points. What to me, in my opinion, it fails at is seeing those points through, because it's like it tries to reduce all these problems to matters of individuals and turns us all onto buyers and sellers, which is what the capital system does anyway, especially since the 1970s when we've had the experiment and program of what's called neoliberalism. I'm sure you've heard that bandied around, right? That term?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, neoliberalism. The
Yeah. Yeah.
In practice, it's essentially the it is the rhetorical and philosophical justification for what are brutal austerity measures that go with, like, a post-industrial society, essentially, as we live in the northern hemisphere. You know, the I don't know. Do you want to get into, like, the fucking Bretton Woods Agreement and all that shit, or?
No, but I do. I'm reading some of these comments right here. Somebody's asking to elaborate on the Koch brothers money.
I can do that.
let me say this. Let me first talk about your objection to hypotheticals. I think this is super, super important because a hypothetical is like, okay, imagine, and I'm going to start out with a hypothetical. There's a new law and we're voting on a new law and we're going to decide whether or not we need to pass this law. A lot of the laws that have happened in the past were absolute failures because they didn't think ahead. They never considered the hypotheticals.
Who's that?
Government, any government. I mean, I could probably name a bunch of laws that failed and did the wrong thing. Here's one. Okay. So I found this out today. Because like I said, I like money. I like playing with money. I went into, and I'm a gambler. I opened a stock account so I could do a little bit of day trading with like $500. Well, apparently there's a law that you're not allowed to day trade unless you've got $25,000 in your account.
Yeah.
Why? Because day trading is dangerous. So little old me who only wants to gamble with $500 is now forced to put $25,000 into my gambling account because the government wants to protect me. Now, maybe they came up with a law. Maybe it was some lobbyists who were like, yeah, how do we get more people to dump more money into these accounts? Maybe it was that. Or maybe it was, okay, maybe somebody said, okay, well, hypothetically, let's say somebody doesn't want to put that much money in. And somebody else said, stop asking all these hypothetical questions. It's not a real thing. And so I think the hypotheticals are extremely important because you can propose a question. And, you know, like my thing with moving out to the woods. Yes, I don't want to live in the woods. I don't want to build a hut out of sticks. But it has more to do with, I think, the philosophy of morality of what is and isn't possible, especially when you consider the economic repercussions of, you know, let's say you have two options, right? If there's only two options in a marketplace and you take one away, the price goes up. And so if my two options are to live in a house or live in the woods and you take one of those away, now all of a sudden the price of the other goes up. And that I think personally has a lot of effect to do with a lot of people who don't want to deal with capitalism, but are forced to live in a system where they're continuously paying rent or property taxes or all these other things. Because that is for a lot of people, that is their biggest expense. You work your ass off 40 to 60 hours a week, you get a paycheck. Yeah, they're taking the income tax out of it and everything else. But at the end of the day, you got to go pay your rent or your property tax. Or maybe you can't even buy a house because you're spending all your money on rent. So you can't even save that much money. And you're forced into this position. Whereas, yes, you know, living in sticks isn't a glamorous lifestyle, but at least you could do that for a while and save up some money, and then maybe you could buy some bricks and build your own brick house. And I know people who literally have done that, built their own house out of some bricks. So my point is, like, my point is, going back to the hypothetical, is like, there are people, like, I can say this is a hypothetical. I shouldn't have to name a specific person or a specific reason why I would want to do something if...
Okay, but like what you're describing to me, what you're asking for there is like an anecdotal thing, not a hypothetical.
Well, like, I guess what's the difference? The only difference is if I know somebody.
A hypothetical is a situation that you've like made up, whereas an anecdotal thing is something you have like tertiary knowledge of and you're referencing. Well, it's... Because the difference is the difference is that anecdotal is still based in reality. It's not like the best thing you want to bring to a table, but you know, like it still has more sinew on that realistic bone than, you know, just
why should one carry more weight than the other when we're talking about, I mean, if killing somebody is murder, right? Like, if I can ask you, is killing somebody murder? And I'm sure you can say yes, but that's hypothetical because I haven't named anybody. But now if I say, okay, if O.J. Simpson killed his wife, is that murder? Now it's anecdotal. But the question, the underlying question is murder wrong? Is murder immoral? And either way, you've got a visualization of what's actually taking place here to have a better understanding of what the actual situation is.
My question is, why not just use what's actually occurring here instead of just like, you know, retreating to the safety of like this, like, you know, very fettered, you know, hypothetical? Why not just deal with material as it stands? Like, just deal with reality as it is. Like,
so, okay. There was a law that was passed about a week ago that was like 50,000 pages.
Okay.
Okay. That law, if we were debating over that law, those laws aren't in effect yet. So anything I could say about that law, well, it says in here that this is going to happen. Anything I say about that is all hypothetical because it hasn't happened yet. So if that's the case, I shouldn't be able to decide whether or not I should vote on that law because I can't say anything about it because we haven't put it into place yet.
But that's not even a hypothetical, though. That's just you assuming. Like, what's in the law? Do you actually have any idea of what's in the bill? Because if you don't, then your hypothetical is based on nothing. And look,
okay, so
anyways,
in that bill, $700 billion went to foreign countries as foreign aid.
So what's wrong with foreign countries? We have enough fucking money. Like, do you not like foreigners? Like...
But what you're saying is, so let's say we have this bill on the table right now. And you're saying we should pass this bill. I don't care. We're going to give $700 billion.
I'm not going to say that, though, because I don't handle that. I'm a citizen with no political power like you. Neither of us have the authority to say anything about a fucking bill, mate. Like,
Wait. So, let's see. There's some representatives who voted on it, and there's absolutely nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, because again, you said this earlier, mate. You said voting doesn't matter. You said it's a fucking piss take.
You can go protest. You can show up at their door and kick their door in and say, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, you can do that, sure.
There are things you could do, right?
What's that?
But this is
but
the question.
But that's not hypothetical. That's just something you actually want to do.
Right. My question was the hypothetical, which you wouldn't answer because it has to be asked hypothetically because there's no way to ask it unhypothetically.
Right. What were you asking me again?
If a law is being passed, what's your objection to hypotheticals?
My objection to hypotheticals is because you're not dealing with the material reality as it stands. Like, it'd be like if we argued about, well, what if you owned a road? We don't own roads. None of us own roads. No,
I know somebody who owns a road.
Is that right?
But now that I know somebody, it's no longer hypothetical. It's anecdotal.
Yeah. Does it matter?
Yeah, because if I want to ask your opinion on something, right? Let's say XYZ and somebody wants to do something. Is that right or wrong? I want to ask you a question of morality. Do I have to give you an actual instance?
We're not talking about morality. We're talking about politics.
Isn't politics? Well,
no, not inherently.
I'm trying to figure out how to say this. Politics, as it pretends to be, or as a lot of people perceive it, is an attempt to codify morality.
No, politics is deciding who gets what. Politics is how you organize a economic system.
If we're talking about murderers go to prison, right? It took me a few seconds to rephrase that so I didn't say hypothetically. If somebody murdered somebody, they go to prison. Murderers go to prison, right? But that's got nothing to do, I mean, unless you want to talk about private prisons, that's got nothing to do with who owns what.
I mean, it does, though. Private prisons and who writes the laws. Like, now you're kind of getting it.
All right. Okay. Let's say the people behind the curtain, right? The people who are pulling the strings, who are writing the laws, the prosecutors, the judges, all these people who are putting people in prison.
Hold on. Why are they all like a totem? Why is it like a whole like? Why is it just like a mass body? Like, because there are various like. That's what makes it not a. What's that?
They all play a part in that.
Yeah, they do, but like
I mean,
the way
procedural.
You set it up,
it's bureaucratic, but
yeah, but the way you set it up makes it seem like it's this like hive mind, and it's just really this, you know, it's the general, you know, like it's the general circumstance of a circuitous system, like
okay, and every single one of those people is acting in their own best interest to put murderers in prison, right?
More well, less. Do they under well? How, what, just define their best interests.
Whatever they're... I mean, I thought that's where you were going. They're not a hive mind. They're working individually. But at the end of the day, what they do is they put murderers in prison.
Sure.
And here, you and I are as citizens of this system. And those people tell us that the reason they do that is to keep us safe because they want to keep us safe from immoral behavior.
Okay, sure.
Now, that might just be the propaganda that they're telling us so that they can control people, but at the end of the day, they're posing as if they have legislated morality. Their laws, they tell us, their laws are there to keep us safe against immoral people.
Okay, well, I mean, you seem to, like, think that's bullshit anyway. Like, you're saying that it was with a like little air of snark about it, so then, you know, what do we disagree about here?
Well, because the reason I say that is because I think a lot of those people really do believe that that's what they're doing. They believe, a lot of people believe it's immoral to be gay or it's immoral to smoke weed. And so yes, they've legislated that under the guise of we're protecting you from yourself or protecting you from other people. They've legislated morality.
Yes, but this has nothing to do with them as individuals. The issue there is the economic and political system that has allowed them to be in those positions of power in the first place. If you feel that there's a reason if you feel you're not in those systems, it's called manufacturing consent. Like, it doesn't matter what they individually think or not. I don't care why they're doing it. The issue is that they're doing it. Like, that's the material reality of it. I don't care about the individual's, like, you know, individual wants or desires towards, you know, what's led them to, I don't know, whatever the fuck it is they're doing. What matters is what they're doing.
All right, fair enough. So what we have here is we're isolating politics from morality.
Yes.
Which is, man, you threw me off guard with that one because honestly,
that's
most of the conversations...
Marxism. That's just like...
Oh, shit.
That's just Marxism made. Well, like, that's just historical materialism. Like,
here's the reason I have such a difficulty doing that is not because it's wrong to do that, but because most of the conversations I have about government are always, you know, well, how do we handle certain situations with, like, because most people that I talk to are afraid that without government, immoral people would come and do immoral things to them, which I say it's total bullshit. It sounds like you agree with that.
Yeah, yeah. Like that's
more or less.
Yeah.
I mean, there's always gonna be bad people, but
Yeah. But like,
now they have government power.
Yeah, so, and I mean you're also getting into like things like criminal like that. That's such like a vague idea. Like you're getting into things like you could go into like criminology or like, you know, the way people are socialized or so you know, just sociology in general, nature versus nurture, like there's a whole slew of reasons that people act the way they do or act immorally, you know? But again, my issue is like when you have a socioeconomic system that rewards and encourages through various machinations, through one reason or another, the rise of, you know, sociopaths like Trump or, you know, whatever, then, you know, that's not great. Like, and I individually have a moral, you know, issue with that, but I wouldn't necessarily say that's like a political thing. It might inform my political opinion, but I don't think the moralism itself has anything to do with the political structure or how I, you know, like would scientifically interpret the political structure. You know what I mean? Like,
right. Well, this is an interesting question too, because I pose this with anarchists who say, oh no, we just can't have a government. But what if we took what we today we call government, We strip it of all morality, we strip it of all immorality and all of its immoral force, its ability to do immoral things. And we said, this is what it is. What if it was, you know, it was so different from what we have today, you couldn't even recognize it as a government, but it was still called the government. Would that be okay? And their objection to this is no, because it's still government. But what does that really mean? Because if you have three people who assemble and decide to do something together, you could argue, well, it's just a group of people, right? What is government? There's nothing magical about government. It's just a group of people doing something with some sort of structure where they, you know, tell each other, you know, some of them give them orders, some of them have rules they're going to follow. That's ultimately all it is. And so if you were to strip it of everything that it does that's immoral, is there an objection to having it?
Well, again, like, to me, that's just kind of a useless question, because we don't have a government that is, like, on immoral. And I don't care. Like, I don't give a shit. That's not my prerogative here. Like, I don't give a shit if something's called government. I don't care what label's on a thing. Like, I mean, I get how that can, you know, be an issue with some libertarians when it's like, oh, the government, like, seized my pot farm, or, oh, McDonald's, like, you know, has a copyright on this particular, like, strand of, you know, CBT I'm using, so now it's fine, I guess. But, like, I don't, like, again, that's my issue with the hypothetical. That's not what we're dealing with. Like,
it puts the onus onto
not figuring out what does not work, but, like, immediately trying to figure out something that does work. When it's putting the cart before the horse, basically. Like, you got to deal with things as they are before you can go off and, like, try and get very fanciful with, like, the way we all think things should be. Like, that's not, and that doesn't preclude, like, imagination or having a better idea of, you know, like, you can't work towards a perfect model. That's not how politics will work. That's not how any of this will work. Like, you have to work with the cards you're dealt, basically. And that's not to say you can't be ambitious or, you know, a bit of a dreamer or whatever, or have hope for the future or anything like that. But you have to be smart about this. You have to understand what it is you're actually dealing with and what you can build from there.
So, okay. So let me ask you two simple questions. Do you agree, or do you approve of the system of government that we have now? I think I know the answer, but just to re-answer that.
No.
Okay. And without any hypotheticals, what can you do about it?
Well, me personally, in terms of, like, the big macro scale,
or like, yes, or if you could give any advice to anybody who's listening, what they should do.
Well,
or could do.
See, that's where it gets into a weird thing, because, like, at the moment, from my vantage point, you know, someone on the left, we've kind of been on the back foot since, like, at least the 90s, and, like, the last big gasp of, like, actual, like, organized, fairly articulate, you know, activism we've had was, like, the protests against the World Trade Organization. And yeah, later you had the stuff against the Iraq War, but by then, we have to understand a lot of modes of protest, like anything under capitalism, can get subsumed into the system and marketed and sold back to you as a cure. You know, like, for example, like streaming service, you're familiar with streaming services, you know, Netflix and all that stuff,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah, like when those first started, it was like a cool alternative to cable, because it's like, well, I'm only paying for the specified things that I want, and it's this one thing, and I'm only paying, like, what, $5 a month it was? I don't know. But anymore, because of the way because you have the declining rate of profit with the capitalist system, those streaming services are turning into cable channels again. You're having the same kind of thing where it's like it's getting even more, you know, like, well, you can't watch it all on Netflix. You have to, because Disney's got the rights to such and such and such. And, you know, right. It just, these individual companies kind of balloon and, you know, undercut their competitors. And so now you have just, now instead of having to, you know, have the, you know, luxury of just like one or two streaming services for like $5 or $10 a pop, you'd have to, you know, again, it's just, it's cable, but worse for the consumer, because if you wanted to theoretically watch all this shit, you have to pay like, I don't know, $500. There's a hypothetical.
You keep saying you have to, but I mean, really, it's, and you just said it was a luxury. Like, nobody really has to pay for any of that.
No, but like, again, that goes back to our earlier topic about like just individual markets where like versus like, you know, macro scale things. It's like, because that same market structure, that same system imposed itself on everything. It could be something as inconsequential as Netflix or watching The Simpsons or, you know, getting your fucking cancer treatment, you know, like that's the issue here, that like there is no. Like, that's the one thing that makes capitalism unique to any other political body or organization. Literally everything is subject to the market. Everything. Everything. You cannot escape it. You cannot undercut it.
Right, but when you talk about cancer, I mean, cancer, like, you talk about Netflix, right? I could start my own Netflix tomorrow if I wanted to. I you know, I have a video camera. I can go out and shoot some stuff. But I can't. Right. But then when you talk about cancer,
start an oil company, mate. Like,
if I have oil under my house, I could. Except if the government's going to come and do something about it.
Okay, but here's a hypothetical for you. What if you, like most people, do not?
Then I'd buy it from somebody else.
What if you don't have the money to buy it from somebody else?
But oil is cheap.
But what if you're
cancer,
disabled? Like
cancer
me?
Treatment is not. But this is the point I'm getting at. Right now, if you wanted to buy a pen of insulin in the United States, it's $100. Here in Mexico, it's only $12. It's manufactured in the United States and exported to Mexico, where it's sold for $12. Why is that? It's not because of the market. It's because of the government.
That is the market, though.
Okay, it's a... Well, the government is fucking with the market.
You can't play football without a field.
Right. But government is fucking with the market, and that's why people in America are having a hard time paying for their insulin. It's not because it's $100. It's because the government is fucking with the market. It's not because of capitalism. Because it's not because of the manufacturer of the insulin. Because if it weren't for the manufacturer of the insulin, the diabetic wouldn't have any insulin to buy at all.
So in that case, the manufacturer insulin should be able to set any price they want, because the market will just naturally regulate it, and then the guy who has insulin will be like, I can afford that.
Why don't they sell it for $100 in Mexico?
What's that?
Why don't they sell it for $100? They sell it for $100 in the U.S. Why don't they sell it for $100 in Mexico?
Well, I mean, like...
Because nobody can afford it. That's the only answer. They can't sell it for $100. And in fact, the reason why they sell it for $100 in the U.S. and they can't, and it's illegal to bring it from Mexico back into the U.S. is because of the government. Now, arguably, it's because that same company paid the government to make sure that, hey, I know you guys have a military force. Make sure people don't bring that insulin back over the border so that I can sell it for $100. Because if they didn't, they'd be forced to sell it for $12 everywhere.
Why would they be forced to sell it for $12 everywhere?
Because if they didn't want to sell it for $12 in the United States, I would come down to Mexico and buy a shit ton of it, and I'd bring it across the border into the United States and sell it for $13 while they're selling it for $100. I'd make a buck and everyone would be happy, and they wouldn't be selling any of their stuff. They have to sell it for $12. They have to lower their price, or they're not going to sell it.
Okay, but like, do you think that, do you think insulin should be subjected to the market?
I mean, if it wasn't, I mean, think about it like this. This company who's making $1 billion a year selling insulin, although they are ripping people off using the government, if it came down to, well, shit, we can't even make 25 cents off of one of these pens, let's just stop making them because we're not making any profit. Then who gets the insulin? Nobody, because now nobody's making it.
Why wouldn't anyone make it?
Because there's no profit. There's no incentive. Why would they make it? I mean, unless you put a gun to their head and make them make it.
Why do you need a profit incentive to save people's lives?
Oh, believe me, there are plenty of people who wouldn't need that incentive and who would help to, and I know plenty of doctors who go around the world helping people for free. But we're talking about a very large scale operation with thousands of employees. I mean, we're talking about employees who manufacture the stuff. Are they going to do it for free? And all the people who are like, their job, I don't care about helping people. I just work in a factory putting things in boxes. Okay. What about all those people?
But here's my thing. Why wouldn't they do it for free?
Did you go pack insulin today?
What's that?
Did you go pack insulin at the insulin factory today? Did you go over there and say, hey, I want to volunteer?
I'm disabled. I can't work or volunteer, mate.
You can come on. There's something you could do. I have a very good friend who's in not as great condition as you, who can do a lot more than that.
Okay, well, what if he couldn't? Like, what if you just can't? Like, how do you know?
Do you even know what kind of jobs they have at the insulin factory to be able to say I can't do any of them?
I don't really give a shit, mate. Like,
because you don't want to help. Because there's no, you have no reason. You have no incentive. Because like you're telling me nobody should need an incentive to help people, but at the same time, you don't want to help people.
It shouldn't be on me to help people. That's the thing. Like, it.
And if everybody had that attitude, nobody would help anybody, and then we'd all be fucked.
But it's not individual attitudes that make up our body politic as it stands, mate. Like, that's my thoughts on this are inconsequential. They're as inconsequential as yours. Even if someone wanted to help and do that, they couldn't because they wouldn't make any money or any profit. Do you not understand how that is coercive by market force?
I mean, like I said, there are some people I know who travel around the world.
Yeah, only some people. There's only some people because the system won't allow there to be more.
And if you take away the system that incentivizes the other people to do it, because, hey, I mean, and look, this goes back to the point. I don't think that people should be forced to have to get a job just to survive. I don't think that should be the case.
You're saying, though, because like there's something I could do. And when I said I couldn't work, you were like, oh man, you're just, you know, there are people in worse off. You can get up, bucko, pull yourself up by your bootstraps and get on out there, mate. Like, you're talking out of both sides.
But I'm not telling you to go work for anybody for profit. I'm telling you go help somebody, and you don't want to help somebody, and you're saying you don't have to, which is very true.
But I can't. I can't drive anywhere. I can't just hop in a car like you and go somewhere because I'm not in the.
Okay, wait. You're doing something right now that you absolutely could do to save the world. You can actually volunteer at a suicide help hotline and talk to people who are worried about killing themselves and talk them out of it. That's something you can do to help people.
But I'm not trained in that. I don't have any unique qualification for that.
The people who are trained in that and who have unique qualifications for that only have that qualification because they went out and got the qualification. I guarantee you, if you wanted to do that, you could. And I'm not saying you have to, but I'm saying if you wanted to, you could. Like, now it sounds like you're just saying self-defeatism where you can't do something when you absolutely could.
I'm not talking about self-defeatism. I'm saying you're trying to bottleneck everyone into the same. Again, you're saying, oh, we're not all coerced into participating in capitalism, but we are. This is exactly how.
I agree. We are all coerced into capitalism. My argument is that we don't have to be, and that it's government that is doing that.
But that's not government, though. It's also corporations.
Absent government, there would be nobody forcing anybody to work in a factory.
Yes, there would. There'd be corporations forcing you to work in a factory.
At what point does Amazon put a gun to someone's head and say, work in my factory?
Have you not heard about the Ludlow Massacre or the violent, like, you know, Pinkerton thugs in the 1930s?
Is that what Amazon is doing right now?
It's what it could be doing in the future. Nothing's...
Wait, that's really hypothetical. Happened. I don't want to hear that.
No, but that's not hypothetical, because that's actually based on...
No, you said they could be doing it in the future. That's hypothetical.
But that's based on historical precedents.
My hypothetical of people living in the woods is based on historical precedents.
No, it's not. That's just
people didn't used to live in the woods. People didn't used to hunt for their food. People didn't used to build their own homes out of sticks and mud.
But there's nothing to suggest that we go back to that in mass. It has nothing to do with...
I'm not suggesting we go back to that. I'm saying that very fundamental... Imagine it's illegal to breathe air and there's a tax on it. And I'm trying to tell you, well, there used to be a time where there was no tax on it.
That would be your bag, wouldn't it?
To tax air?
Yeah.
A libertarian wants to tax air?
You can, okay, well, let's go back to your you can call it government, but it's not, you can call it tax, but, you know, like, they're going to make
No, I wouldn't, because here's the thing, if I said you can call it government, but it doesn't do anything immoral, that means it's not stealing from people, which means it's not taxing people. But, of course, that goes to the point about property, and we can argue over what is property and all that stuff, because that's, back to definitions, that's where a lot of people will argue and have disagreements.
Yeah.
But that's, we'll save that for another day. Yeah. But
well, I mean, I already talked about that. Property is like, you know, air, natural resources, you know.
Well, that's where some people will disagree.
That's Pierre Proudhon. That's one of you. That's Pierre Proudhon. That's one of you guys. Like,
one of me guys. Hey, I don't use labels.
That's a libertarian. That's part of your historical canon. And
I
tradition.
Don't even call myself a libertarian that much. But my point is this: like, I don't know.
You've got the red and you've got the yellow and black. You're not a libertarian.
No, actually, if you talk to a lot of libertarians, they hate my yellow and black, and they hate that I say taxation is theft because
yeah,
I think it's
that
not
shit
true.
Was cool in like, because that shit was cool in like 2010.
No, because
like,
they don't believe
you know,
it's
like
true.
Three trends behind. You should be like a hot like anime wolf telling you about how Ministry's Antifa
what?
Video is flaming or something. Like
what?
You're a
few okay. This is behind. Like. This is like now you're getting it. You started out talking about individualism, but now you're talking in groupthink as if I belong to some sort of group because I have a symbol that other people use, even though
because
not all people in that group use that symbol.
By definition, like a you know, that is a societal floating signifier. Like a symbol needs more than one person to agree on what it is. Like there is no real. Like, I don't think there's a conflict between the individual and society. I think there's a false binary.
Say that one more time. There's no conflict between the individual and
society. There's no
conflict
between the individual and society. That is a false binary.
There's no conflict between an individual and society.
Yeah.
What do you mean exactly by that? Because as an individual, I do have plenty of conflicts with society.
Okay, but you're still part of society.
Arguably, yeah.
Yeah, factually, yes, you're part of society.
But you said there's no conflict.
Like, not in the sense of, like, this weird totem that you're trying to put up where it's, like, the individual is, like, constantly, like, you know, there's no inherent, like, you know, tension or conflict there, politically speaking. Like, the issue comes from your class situation. It's not you as an individual. No one gives a fuck about you individually. Me, not you, but, you know, just anyone individually. We don't fucking matter. Like,
right, you're saying you take one person out and put another person in their place, and that would, and no one would notice a difference.
I mean, like, politically speaking, in terms of, like, you know, the socioeconomic, like, historical scale of things, yeah, like, it... Like, it goes back to what Tolstoy said about Napoleon, you know, if Napoleon didn't come up then in particular, then another would be belched up by the gears of history or, you know, like, it is what it is, like.
All right, well, I would love to keep this going. We'll see if we can bring this back up, but we are definitely over time for the show. This has been awesome. I do want to thank you for doing this. We did butt heads a little bit, but that's cool. I'm glad we had this conversation.
You're a nice lad.
And the other thing for everybody listening, even if you're taking one side or the other, I just want you to remember, go into every conversation with an open mind that everything you know could be wrong, because for all you know, you've been brainwashed. I took that approach to this conversation. I really did listen to what you had to say. Some of it made sense. Some of it I disagreed with. But hey, we will live to begin to argue another day.
Yes.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, man. If you're listening to this, if you like what you heard, please make sure to share it. Invite all your friends, share it all over the place. Do something to make me some money. We got to capitalize off of this because capitalism is awesome. I'm just fucking with you. I really don't do this to make any money, but if I do, hey, who cares?
Also, all right, also-
guys. Yeah.
Before I go, dumb hat solidarity.
All right. I just want to give you an opportunity. If anybody's interested in learning anything about what you had to say, if you want to plug a website, if you want to give them some books to read, I want to give you an opportunity to, I don't want to censor you. Say what you got to say.
Okay. Well, I've got a band called Linen, you know, for reasons you might have been able to guess. Our website is facebook.com/linenpunkrock. We just released our first album called Fuck It, Part One, Times Have Been Worse. You can get that on Bandcamp, you know, pretty much anywhere. It's on Spotify, I think. Should be sorted by now. But my wife and I are also starting a podcast soon. So that's fun. They said hello. that's all I got. Linen Punk Rock, you know, look us up if you like Dead Kennedys and Ministry and Typo Negative, I suppose.
Awesome.
And, you know, whatever. So, yeah, thanks for having me, mate. Cool. Really appreciate it.
Awesome, man. I'll see you next time. Taxation is Theft.